This show proudly sponsored by Real American Freestyle Wrestling.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division, it's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Bottom of the hour, Lieutenant Colonel Alan West. You know, earlier, about an hour ago, I had a chance to talk to one of the most important people in America, the Treasury Secretary, Scott Bessent. And we're going to get to that in just a minute. I'll bring you back to that interview. As you know, the big, beautiful bill is being worked on as we speak. The Voterama has not stopped. So let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I'm outraged that we have a candidate for mayor of New York, Mr. Mamdani, that cannot walk back or cannot condemn the words globalize the intifada. Let me tell you what it means to a Jew. It means violence. It means October 7th. It means firebombing people in Colorado. So that's the connotation. That's the essence of it. And that's what it means to Jewish people.
He's 100% right. And to the American people. Fallout continues among Dems as Zohran Mamdani locks in his Democratic primary win. But leadership is not on board as his socialist beliefs and radical anti-Semitic views are reconfirmed.
Number two.
I think it's close. I just spoke with some of the people involved. It's a terrible situation that's going Gaza, he's asking about. And we think within the next week we're going to get a ceasefire.
I hope so. Chance for peace be becoming stateside. Gaza operation comes to a close, perhaps, as all Hamas leadership has been killed. The next move, release all the hostages.
Number one.
And these are reforms, Mr. President, are going to make this program stronger, more effective, more efficient, improve it in a way that it gets the assistance to the people for whom it was intended and not to people who are gaming the system.
Senator John Thune, Capitol Hill, on talking about what's happening with the big, beautiful bill. Make or break time for the president's economic four-year foundational agenda. The market is soaring, but Elon Musk makes it harder to pass. I'll explain. But first, here's my interview with Scott Bessent. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent, thanks so much for joining us.
Brian, good to be with you.
A lot of tension in Capitol Hill right now in the Voterama in 20-plus hours. Does this worry you? Because we hear you're four votes away from Republicans having enough to pass.
Well, it would just be one. So that would be their four no votes. So we just need one more vote to get to 50. Vice President Vance is up on the Hill talking to his former colleagues in the Senate and is there to cast the tiebreaker if necessary. I'm not sure it will be.
Lisa Murkowski says, I need a special carve-out because Alaska is unique for Medicaid to be able to get the additional funds. The parliamentarian says, no, you know, you can't do that. Evidently, she's been buttonholed and cornered by a few from Barrasso to Thune to Lindsey Graham, and they seem frustrated. What could you tell us about that, Alaska?
I've been in touch with the leadership, and everybody has special issues, and I think that we're all going to get that the Senate is going to get behind this. The Democrats have been trying to block the Republican progress. That's why this has taken so long, and I am confident that we will get to yes this afternoon.
So it's all the 2017 tax cuts. They become permanent, and Wall Street seems to love that idea, but you're also adding to defense. You're adding to border security. No taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime, no taxes on car loans. So these are some of the changes that we're going to see, but yet America right now, for the most part, 38% approval rating on this bill. I know you don't do approval rating or do polls for a living, but why do you think the perception is so different than the way you feel about it?
Well, Brian, I think it's some misinformation in the media, the violence with which the Democrats have attacked this bill. And I think once the benefits start flowing through to the American people, that's why it's important to get it in the president's desk July 4th. And then in 90 or 120 days, the American people are going to start feeling this great economic stimulus. And I don't even want to talk about what happens if this doesn't pass.
Right. 67% tax increase across the board. And would you also say that Democrats had a chance for 4 years to change the tax rates? And they could have done that. There was no attempt to do that. So they must have liked where the tax rates were.
Look, Brian, all they wanted to do was spend, spend, spend. They blew out the deficit. When I was up on the Hill recently for my hearings, I felt like I was being lectured to on fire prevention from a bunch of arsonists. Like, they increased the debt by trillions of dollars. They left us with a mess, and we are going to fix it.
So Politico had a story last week saying that the problems other countries are having with the American side, your side, is that they don't know who had the hammer. Was it you, Lutnick? Was it the Treasury Secretary? Was it the Commerce Secretary? Or was it the trade representative? Has there been a problem with getting one voice to speak for the country?
One voice speaks for the country, and it's President Trump. And he has the final say on all these deals. And I think that that story in Politico was planted by some of our trading partners, trade delegations, because they aren't coming with fulsome enough offers. And if they can't get the deal across the line, they want to shoot the messenger. It's really the quality of the offers on their side. Everyone who's come with a good offer is going to get a deal.
So we saw what happened with Canada. They came out and said, we're going to start taxing your tech companies. President said, good, talks are off. They said, we are not going to do that. Talks are back on. There was some optimism a week ago about Canada. Can you tell us where that the status of that trade deal is?
I think that President, Prime Minister Carney have agreed to try to get a trade deal done within 30 days. I thought it was unfortunate that the Canadians did a retroactive, Brian, digital service tax that yesterday, on Monday, our great tech companies were going to have to pay $2 billion in back taxes under a different administration, that under the Trudeau administration for these digital service taxes. And those service taxes only fall on American companies. They're highly discriminatory.
Right. So that pushback was effective. I saw the German chancellor come out on Friday and said, enough of these trade talks. I want a deal within 3 days from the EU with the U.S. Did that rattle anybody's cages? Did you see progress after the new chancellor made those statements?
Well, Brian, one thing that's great to see is Germany reasserting its leadership. It's the largest economy in Europe. They had what I would call turtled for a while under their previous administration. Now they're coming out. They're meeting their NATO commitments. They are pushing the EU to try to get a trade deal done. So it is very nice to see Chancellor Merz asserting German leadership.
Did anything change since that statement?
I can tell you, things have changed in the past 2-3 weeks since the Merz administration's come in.
Are you against the letters that the president's going to send out if he doesn't have a deal by July 9th? The
president is very good at giving us maximum leverage, and I can tell you the idea that many countries' reciprocal trade level or reciprocal tariff levels will revert to the April 2nd level is giving the trade team a lot of leverage and bringing people to the table with their best and final offers.
Do you, I hear Japan, where the rubber hits the road, is cars. And also, he presently mentioned rice. It's like, you guys need rice? We got rice. You don't want to buy our rice. They don't want to sell American cars. And they seems to be, even though we're tight allies, it seems to be at a breaking point. President says talks are off. I'm not optimistic. Is Scott Bessent optimistic?
Brian, we're at an interesting point with Japan. As you said, they're great allies, especially in defense in the Pacific. We're aligned with values. But they also have an election on July 20th that they're having to play to. So perhaps going into the election, they are not able to come with the trade deals that we would expect. So maybe after the election.
When you look at the economy, people saw all caught up in this bill. But you have another chance at reconciliation afterwards. And I'm wondering if that could be a promise to help some senators that are worried about this bill. Hey, we can go back again and offer some others in terms of cuts or changes.
Brian, I think that especially in cost cutting, no one thinks that this is the final bill. As I've said many times, you and I have been talking about it for over a year, I'm a deficit hawk, and I think this is a down payment on right-sizing the bloated government, and we'll start here. But the important thing, get the bill on the president's desk, and then we can talk about further spending controls from there.
So the deficit, the CBO says is going to add $3 to $5 trillion to the deficit. What do they seem to have wrong with most Republican administrations, especially this one, that has many like you exasperated by some of their conclusions? Like, in layman's terms, why do they see it different than you see it?
I'm looking at history. So they were $700 billion off, excluding inflation, for President Trump's first tax bill. And what they don't do is they do what's called static scoring. So no matter what, the economy grows at 1.8%. Most of the people who work at the CBO are Democrats. So maybe a Democratic economy can't grow more than 1.8%. But that 1.8% does not move up or down whether this bill lapses and we have the largest tax increase in history, which mm-hmm. would be a disaster. I think we get something between -4% and -7% growth, or whether we pass this bill, growth accelerates and we get something closer to 3% over a sustained period, because growth changes the debt trajectory dramatically.
At the end of the day on a Friday, when it's you and you're shutting the lights off and the big, beautiful bill has a verdict and let's say it passes, what worries you the most, that you find yourself thinking about the most, that you think you can affect the most over the next 3.5 years?
We have a big agenda from here. Obviously, peace deals, trade deals, tax deals have been the focus the past 100 days. But we've got a lot more. We've got a lot more to go, Brian. As you and I have talked about in the past, we want to make sure that Main Street starts doing well. Wall Street's done great. And my goal, if I walk out the door in January 2029, is that the rewards for the economy were evenly distributed. President Trump is committed to that. I was with him at the U.S. Steel plant in Pittsburgh 3 weeks ago. And I have to tell you, the steel workers are behind President Trump because he knows that they will do well under him, unlike the previous administrations. We're going to keep inflation low.
Right.
We're going to make sure there are opportunities for everybody. We're going to bring back manufacturing, and we're going to bring this deficit down.
The inflation stopped, but it was high when you took over. How do you get the prices to come down?
Well, there are two ways, Brian. So we're bringing down energy costs. Deregulation is the hidden tax. So as we bring down deregulation, that will substantially decrease household costs. And then the third thing is what we are seeing is real wage growth for working families.
Already.
So biggest 5-month increase in history for the beginning of a president's term. And so we saw great wage growth for hourly workers, non-supervisory mm-hmm. workers under President Trump's first term. I think we're going to see that again.
So lastly, in April, when they made this announcement, a lot of famous business people said, wow, this is crazy to have trade deals and basically try to cut trade deals with dozens of countries. And the market dropped like a rock. And now here we are 3-4 months later. You only have two deals, a framework and a UK deal done, but the market's hit an all-time high. And there's some speculation and people saying, maybe Trump was right and we were wrong. Why did the market come all the way back, but yet so few deals have been done? And where did the experts who you hang out with, I mean, the best of the best, where did they get it wrong?
Well, Brian, I think I was with you right after it was done. And I urge people to stay calm, that these are the maximum tariff levels, that countries can come negotiate them down. And there was just what I call tariff derangement syndrome. A huge number on the Democratic side, they became the Trump tariffs, so they were automatically hated. The business community hadn't seen this in years. And when you try something new and dramatic, people maybe get uncomfortable, but now we've seen that this is a great rebalancing for the American workers.
Scott Bessin, thanks so much for your time. It's just one of many, I hope, dozens of interviews, and next time I'll come see you at your place. Is that all right?
We'd love to have you in the cash room at Treasury, Brian.
All right, and hopefully you'll have a big, beautiful bill to talk about soon.
I think on Friday.
Great.
And
thank
we'll
you
see
so
you.
Much, Scott.
Good.
It ends up right. Back in a moment.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
It's the Will Cain Show. Watch it live at noon Eastern, Monday through Thursday on FoxNews.com or on the Fox News YouTube channel. And don't miss a show. Get the podcast 5 days a week at FoxNewsPodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
What are we talking about here? Well, why don't we take a look at the big, beautiful bill? I got five different polls across the screen for you. This is the net favorable rating. The highest rating comes from the Washington Post at minus 19 points. How about Pew, minus 20 points? How about Fox, minus 21? Quinnipiac, minus 26? And KFF takes the cake at minus 29 points. When you have a bill whose net favorable rating ranges from minus 19 points, which is already terrible, all the way to minus 29 points, the bottom line is the American people don't see this as a big, beautiful bill. They see it as a big, bad bill. They hate it, hate it, hate it.
Yeah, I mean, he's a sensationalistic pollster. That's why he got the job at CNN. And numbers are numbers. But I think a lot has to do with the marketing and the communication on it. And for the most part, people say, well, it's going to add to the deficit. Listen to the CBO. I was just talking to Scott Bessent. You heard him. And I did an interview on TV and radio. I don't know. I forgot which one he mentioned it in. But when you look at the CBO, they said this is going to be the deficit, additions to the deficit, if the GDP grows at 1.8%. And he said, Scott told me, under no circumstances does he believe we're going to be at 1.8%. That is historically low. And it wouldn't be reflective of all the cut and red tape, the energy cost decrease, the amount of drilling, alternate energies, as well as the revenue, along with the trade deals. Now, keep in mind, too, we have bought in $162 billion worth of tariff revenue. That's not going anywhere. That's not even figured into the bill. So I do think you got to pass this thing. I do think that there's some like Green Deal stuff that's still in there. And if you really were going to be smart about it and fiscally responsible about it, and if you had a party that would work with you, you would know that Medicaid has to be fixed. So there are work requirements with Medicaid. A lot of people are going to go, screw it, I'm just going to get a job on my own. That's the hope, like with welfare. Number two, with Medicaid, they're going to be twice a year checking eligibility. If that's a problem, if eligibility is a problem that you want to preserve, you worried about people ineligible on there being kicked off? Sorry. So the other thing is we got to add to defense. We got to add to the border. And if money can be saved in those areas, the border's already closed. But we can't keep the military there forever. So that's going to be important. Tom Tillis, a Republican, also against a cut seven.
I'm telling the president that you have been misinformed. You supporting the Senate mark will hurt people who are eligible and qualified for Medicaid.
That remains to be seen. The Republicans tell a dramatically different story, and Senator Ted Budd, same state, has no problem signing on to this. Does he care less about North Carolinians than Tom Tillis, who's not going to be running for re-election? But you know who could be? Larry Trump could be running for that spot. A lot of moving parts. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is next. When we talk about Texas, huge crackdown on TDA, major gang crackdown in Houston yesterday, the biggest one to date, the Venezuelan street gang. Nice.
Thanks for listening. Do you like true crime podcasts? If so, check out Unsolved with James Patterson. Listen ad-free on Amazon Music or just say, Alexa, play the podcast Unsolved with James Patterson on Amazon Music.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Trump administration steps up ICE raids and mass deportations. One tech developer is pushing back with an app designed to track ICE activity in real time. It's called ice block, and it's controversial to say the least.
He really wants it to be an early warning system for people about the location of Immigration and Customs Enforcement officers. So he says he does not want people interfering with those officers' activity, but he does want people to be able to avoid them altogether if they want. Users can tap the map to report an ICE sighting in their area, and then everybody who uses the platform within 5 miles of that sighting will get a push alert.
Do you believe how stupid these people are? That's CNN for you. Do you know what they're talking about? How to avoid an ICE arrest. You know what ICE does? They pick up illegal immigrant criminals. And you know what they don't need? People to tip off those illegal immigrant criminals. But you know what CNN's doing? They are tipping them off and heralding this site and this app. So law-abiding citizens can who have an illegal immigrant friend can say, hey, or worker or domestic help, hey, by the way, get this app. Find out if ICE is coming to you. So now Tom Homan wants the Justice Department to sue CNN. Can you blame them? Can you blame him? Todd Lyons says this, as ICE acting director, says CNN's promotion of the ICE spotting app is reckless and irresponsible. My officers and agents are facing a 500% increase in assaults, and going on live television to announce an app lets everyone zero in on their locations is like inviting violence against them with the national megaphone. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, Dallas County Republican Chairman, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director, joins us now. Do you believe this? These anchors act like they're doing a public service.
Yeah, it's unconscionable. And when we're approaching our 249th Independence Day, these are people that are acting as, you know, domestic enemies. These are people that are undermining the sovereignty of the United States of America. And let's just look at it this way. They're basically tipping off Trinidad. They're tipping off MS-13. They're tipping off the over, 1,200 special interests Iranian aliens that Joe Biden released into the country, of which we just had two picked up down in Houston, Texas. So they're really aiding and abetting terrorism, terrorist activities, criminal activities. And to me, that's breaking the law. That's being an accessory to a crime. That's aiding and abetting terrorist and criminal activities. So if anything, these people that are promoting this, they should be arrested. They should be charged.
Here's Tom Homan, Cut 43.
I know it's just simply disgusting, and any network that covers that is disgusting as well. Assaults against ICE is up over 500%. Now you got an app that's going to tell where ICE operations are going to be. It's only a matter of time before ICE agents are ambushed by some nut, like what happened in L.A., throwing a Molotov cocktail, throwing bricks at these officers. This is just disgusting at every level.
So he's furious, obviously. So yeah. I looked it up, and Apple, I'm saying, why does Apple or the App Store allow for that to stay on? And it shouldn't. Look at the way this reads. Apps for reporting alleged criminal activity must involve local law enforcement and can only be offered in countries or regions where such involvement is active. Well, it doesn't involve law enforcement. It works against it. It goes on to say apps that solicit, promote, or encourage criminal or clearly reckless behavior will be rejected. Well, reject it. It should not be on the App Store. What's the problem? Yeah.
Well, you know, I don't know if someone is looking at how they can make money. But again, this is about activism, and we know about judicial activism. This is now about media activism. You know, Brian, when I was back in Iraq, there was something that was very troubling and, again, disturbing and disconcerting, and that the terrorists would tip off, you know, media to let them know when they were going to have and where they were going to have IED attacks so that the media can be there to get the immediate report and they could, you know, see it in that sensationalism. And it got to the point where, you know, if we saw media in our area of operations, we had to detain them because we did not know if they had information about terrorist attacks that they were refusing to give us because they just wanted a story. So here again, we have the media that is complicit with terrorists and enemy activity in our United States of America, criminal activity in the United States of America. So, again, think about how, you know, a terrorist could use this app to find out, okay, is ICE in my area or am I being tracked? What do I need to know? How do I need to change my movements because I'm being detected? This is just a horrible thing for the United States of America, and shame on CNN. You know, I don't think this is what Ted Turner originally wanted CNN to become.
I mean, just listen to how proud they are. They're like, look, we got this app. Guys, listen up. Download it. Pay the $5.95. I want to bring you to Israel and Iran. Benjamin Netanyahu's coming to town next week. Cut 14.
I am expected to travel next week to the United States for meetings with U.S. President Donald Trump, Vice President Pence, Secretary of State and National Security Advisor Marco Rubio, Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, the President's Middle East Envoy Steve Witkoff, and the Secretary of Commerce. We have a few matters to finalize in order to reach a trade agreement, in addition to other issues. There will also be meetings with congressional and Senate leaders and defense meetings, which I won't elaborate on here.
The word is, the primary reason, Alan West, is because the president wants the fighting in Gaza to stop. And the IDF reportedly said, guys, we're done. You got to do this diplomatically. We've killed every single Hamas leader. Leader doesn't mean more aren't going to emerge. So what is the next best step here? You need somebody who's going to be innovative and creative. This isn't typical.
Well, I think without a doubt, you cannot allow Hamas to continue on in any effective means to be a governing authority in
but then
Gaza.
Who is?
Well, that's why I think we have to start looking at some type of international peacekeeping entity, some type of entity. Maybe you get the Gulf cooperation countries that will come in there and manage that peace, manage a stalemate, because you don't want to see Hamas just reload and refit. But the great thing is that as long as you keep the pressure on Iran and cut off the flow of materiel and resource support, then Hamas is going to dry up and die on the vine. And just last week, I think we heard about another Hamas and also a Hezbollah leader that were taken out. So they really decapitated those two proxy militaries of Iran. But you still have the Muslim Brotherhood out there, and you know you need to send a message to Qatar. You need to send a message to Turkey also to stop your support to this terrorist organization and do not harbor leaders of Hamas in your country, which is something that Qatar has been doing.
How great were those hits on those three sites, from the Tomahawk sites where they convert the enriched uranium to the two other sites? To me, it changed so much in the region. What do you think?
No, it absolutely does, because now there's no leverage point. There's no trump card. I hate to use that expression, but there's no trump card for Iran to say, look, you don't appease us, acquiesce, you don't, placate our desires and our designs and objectives. You know, we got a nuclear bomb, and we can use it as a dirty bomb, and we will match it up on a ballistic missile. So Iran is really in a bad position. So now what we need to do is focus on the economic sanctions to really bring that regime to his knees. And that, again, affects the Houthis, Hamas, Hezbollah, and Islamic jihadism and terrorism across the world.
More people have been killed there than the entire 12-day war, because they're out there thinking that everybody was collaborating with Israel. That's how freaked out they are about the assassination of their commanders as well as their scientists. And by the way, if you've had 9 leading scientists killed, who wants to be the 10th? Excuse me, I think I'll do something else. I think I'll work for Amazon. Richard Haass, an esteemed Middle East expert, said this about the current situation in Israel. Cut 18.
Bibi Netanyahu does have more mobility politically right now because of what happened with Iran. He changed the conversation. And what he did was something that brought Israelis together. There's no doves in Israel when it comes to Iran or the nuclear program. So this was a really useful thing for him to have done in that sense, Sam. I think he wants a deal. He just doesn't want a deal at what he would see the price or the cost of a Palestinian nationalism gaining a lot of momentum. So he's trying to somehow parse that. So I think he's open to it, quote unquote, principle, but not at what he would see at any price. But I do think politically, Bibi Netanyahu is stronger. That's the bottom line.
I think so, too. He wants those hostages out. But what do you do about the push that Saudi Arabia wants for a Palestinian state? Where do you put them?
Well, again, I think that that's a responsibility that Saudi Arabia and all these other Arab nations should take upon themselves. You cannot have a quote-unquote Palestinian state. And again, historically, there has never been such a thing. Palestine is a region. If you study your history, the introduction of that word was as punishment to the Jews by Roman Emperor Hadrian. So Yasser Arafat was the first one in the mid-60s to try to tie the region to a people. The original agreement was Israel and Jordan, but that was denied. And every time that Israel has tried to have some type of peace and given up land, they have not gotten any peace. They've gotten more aggression. So I don't think that Israel wants to buy off onto that. So, again, we need to look at these Arab nations and say, what are you going to do? You can't just sit here and say we're going to create a territory that is going to harbor terrorism. You're going to be responsible for it, and that's why we should look to them, because I don't think they want terrorism. I don't think that they want chaos and confusion. I think that they would want more prosperity, which is what President Trump talked about.
I would say
so. Gaza, Gaza can be a beautiful, you know, piece of land on the Mediterranean coast, but it cannot be in the hands of Hamas.
Right. I just think that. And I can't believe I'm saying this, 10 years from probably when ISIS came out. Now I think we're looking at a situation where most of these Arab countries are looking for economic progress, not looking for the next terrorist organization. And I think that the Syria situation is fascinating because they're kicking out the Russians. They kicked out the Iranians. They are now open to creating relationships with a relation or recognition of Israel. And we have released the sanctions. They actually have billboards saying, thank you, President Trump, in Syria. Do you believe that?
Well, yeah. And look at Lebanon. I mean, Lebanon may have a non-Hezbollah a leader coming up. And again, once upon a time, people called Beirut the Paris of the Mediterranean. So I do think that people want peace and prosperity. They want a better way of life and a quality of life. And think about Iran prior to 1979. You didn't have that Islamic jihadism. It was a very forward-thinking, very progressive, Western, modern country. And then this radicalism has really destroyed the Middle East. And I think that people, when they see strength, and that's what Donald Trump has shown, that's what Ronald Reagan has showed to the Soviet Union, when people see strength, they rally to that, and they break down the walls and the chains of tyranny.
Alan West, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure. Take care, Brian.
All right, go get him. 1-866-408-7669. I'll come back. First time to get some calls, you can write me at briankilmeade.com. And keep in mind, everybody out there listening in Dallas, coming to you on the 23rd, Will Kane will be joining me. Go to briankilmeade.com, and we'll be on stage with History, Liberty, and Laughs as America celebrates birthday 249. Don't move.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
And with the alligator alphabet, it's the idea that if some immigrant escapes, they just get eaten by an alligator or a snake or something.
I guess that's the concept. This is not a nice business. I guess that's the concept. If you know, snakes are fast, but alligators are, but we're going to teach them how to run away from an alligator, okay? If they escape prison, how to run away. Don't run in a straight line. Run like this. And you know what? Your chances go up about 1%. Okay? Not a good thing.
Huh. That is so, that is hysterical. I mean, the President of the United States just goes out. It's so different from the last guy. He literally walks out, Marine One. He's going to the Everglades to see this new detention facility for illegal immigrants to be held. They need more beds, so we built it into place. They have to worry about security, because if you get out, you'll be eaten by a python or an alligator. So the president just having fun just riffing off that while saying to calling out Elon Musk, maybe I'll send Doge on him. And he also said he was still optimistic, the big, beautiful bill, and pointed out that even though Lisa Murkowski is not voting for it, he goes, no one's done more for Alaska than me. And kind of pointing out to Lisa Murkowski without calling her out, what are you waiting for? Can you at least pay me back for my loyalty by voting for this? And they did try to help Lisa Murkowski by giving her a special carve out on Medicaid, but just because of the topography and geography and how spread out and lightly populated Alaska is, they need some type of Medicaid compensation. I'm not sure the reasoning, but it was solid, according to Senator John Thune. So they put it out, and the parliamentarian said, oh, you can't do that. So they were really at a loss. So Barrasso was seen talking to her. Lindsey Graham was seen talking to her. John Thune asked to go to the office. They went up to Rand Paul, and they said, Rand, what would it take to get you on this bill? And he said, I'm not looking for anything, which is, to me, you're not doing your job. You go in there and negotiate. You don't think that Rick Scott and Ron Johnson are pleased with every aspect of the bill? No. But they're out there trying to make it better. Trish is in Spicewood, Texas. Hey, Trish.
Hi, Brian. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
I was calling. I have an idea how we can you know, Americans as patriots that want to protect our country can counter this ICE app. We can go on there, pay the $6. I don't want to give it to Apple, but what the hell, it's worth it. And we can just tag it. Like, I deliver mail. I can tag it all day long on my route. There's no ICE out here, but it will confuse the immigrants, and hopefully they get tired of running in circles and just leave.
Maybe. I would say this. The fact that it's out there, I mean, for example, I know in the Waze app, if you go into any of these apps, they'll say where the cops are located. And, you know, in the beginning, I thought, wow, that's a little trouble. Remember, you couldn't have a radar detector on to pick up if anyone's shooting in the radar gun at you to see if you were speeding. That was usually a problem. So I just can't believe that CNN would think this is a good idea. Hey, if you're in the area and you want to download this ICE app, this is the great thing to do. Go ahead and do it because it'll let you know that ICE is in the area. Really? Instead of saying, I'll let you know that an illegal immigrant criminal is in the area, they think ICE is the problem. The other thing I wanted to talk about before this hour is done, and that's talk about Zohan Mamdani, who's going to wrap up the Democratic primary today. He got a lot of young voters. Good job. He does a lot of good things on TikTok. Congratulations. But what he stands for is abhorrent. I mean, he's anti-cop. He's anti-free market. He's anti-capitalism. He's anti-Semitic. He's anti-Israel. Got arrested protesting against Israel the day after their attack. You saw him try to go after Tom Homan, who was trying to get rid of legal immigrants over in Albany. Remember when Tom Homan was eating the apple? But what he stands for, billionaires should be illegal. I mean, this guy, it's only going to get worse if you elect a guy like this. So listen to Kevin O'Leary, the ultimate capitalist. Just put it in perspective what New York City might be electing if they don't wake up and snap out of it. Cut 35.
This guy's mandate is to a city. He's a mayor with a nightmare vision for people that believe in capitalism and the American dream. But that's okay. He promised young people who don't understand this mandate free everything, free subway, free buses, free everything. It's a great way to get elected, but you only have to read Atlas Shrugged or look at the Soviet Union or North Korea. This stuff doesn't work, but this guy's going to have a very short fuse. He's going to continue to bring New York down and down and down as a tax base erodes. But I actually think we may solve this before November. I'm not against the guy.
What do you mean you're going to wait and solve it before November? You mean Eric Adams? Sure. Curtis Sliwa? Maybe. Cuomo? No. I mean, he's dead in the water. I like to see Eric Adams come out and say, listen, I got off to a rough start. I hired the wrong people, but this is what I've corrected. This is how I've changed.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. I'm here at 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. All eyes on Washington, D.C., as we have the big, beautiful bill, which is 80% of the president's economic four-year agenda all in one. A lot of action. The people want to run it down on all the other networks, and they're just saying it's not going to add up. We'll give you the facts the best we know. There are still a lot of questions. This hour, we're going to be joined by the managing partner of Romer Dabas, Pierre Dabas. He's a real estate and economic guy. He's going to talk about the Mamdani migration effect after this socialist is about to lock up the Democratic primary. Maude Marin is standing by, a former Democratic running as a Republican in the 2025 Manhattan district. So we'll talk to Maude in a second. But first, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
I'm outraged that we have a candidate for mayor of New York, Mr. Mamdani, that cannot walk back or cannot condemn the words globalize the intifada. Let me tell you what it means to a Jew. It means violence. It means October 7th. It means firebombing people in Colorado. So that's the connotation. That's the essence of it. And that's what it means to Jewish people.
That's Donnie Deutsch weighing in. Flat out, fallout continues from among Dems as Zohran Mamdani locks in the Democratic primary. But leadership not on board. Not Jeffries, not Schumer, not Gillibrand. Because the guy's a socialist, communist, radical, anti-Semite. His views are all confirmed and reconfirmed by him. What is New York thinking?
Number two.
I think it's close. I just spoke with some of the people involved. It's a terrible situation that's going Gaza. He's asking about. And we think within the next week we're going to get a ceasefire.
That is President Trump. Chance for peace. Bibi coming stateside next week. Gaza operation comes to a close, perhaps, as all Hamas leadership has been killed, founders wiped out. But they still have Hamas fighters in there. The next move, release all the hostages if the fighting is to stop.
Number one.
And these are reforms, Mr. President, that are going to make this program stronger, more effective, more efficient. Improve it in a way that it gets the assistance to the people for whom it was intended and not to people who are gaming the system.
There you go. The big, beautiful bill. Make or break for the president's economic four-year foundational agenda. The market is soaring because of it and because of the prospect of trade deals. Musk makes it harder. I'm talking about Elon by coming out and basically saying I'm starting a third party if you go out and do that. And we'll talk about the chance of passing. We see that Mark Wayne Mullen, senator, great friend of the show, has told our reporter that they have the votes to pass the bill in the Senate. Now, if that is indeed the case, they're not out of the woods yet because they've changed it. And a lot of Republicans say, I'm not voting for it if you change anything. And then Don Bacon, the questionable Republican out in Nebraska, says, I'm retiring. So now they have no leverage over him. And that was the one thing, if you lose all Trump support, you probably will lose. But now he says, I'm out. Joining us now is Maud Maron, former Democrat, running now as a Republican, the 2025 Manhattan District Attorney race against the embarrassment to this country, Democratic incumbent Alvin Bragg. Maud, welcome.
Thanks, Brian. Great to be here.
Well, first off, what is your take as we have the second round of ranked voting, choice voting today? Is going to lock up Momdani getting this nomination. What does it tell you about the Democratic Party in New York City?
Well, Brian, I'm going to tell you, I remain horrified by the fact that Momdani has a clear shot of becoming the mayor of our great city, but I'm not super surprised. And part of that is why I left the Democratic Party and I'm now currently running as a Republican. I experienced, you know, I ran as a Democrat in 2021 for city council. I have experienced the leftward lurch of the Democratic Party in New York City around a whole range of issues, but certainly around public safety. And it's bad for our city and it's bad for those of us who live here.
So, I mean, let's think about this. He is anti-cop. He wants to send the social workers out there. By the way, did you ask the social workers? I'm pretty sure they're not into going into domestic violence situations. Number two, he wants to basically, I'm not going to police free speech. It's okay to say globalize the intifada. He's fine with that. He's also one of the people that got arrested after the October 7th attack in New York City protesting for Hamas. This guy's against billionaires, capitalists. He's a socialist, free buses, and up everybody's taxes. It actually has a job. Here he is Sunday. I just want you to hear this. Here he is Sunday, cut 729.
Do you condemn that phrase, globalize the intifada?
That's not language that I use. The language that I use and the language that I will continue to use to lead this city is that which speaks clearly to my intent, which is an intent grounded in a belief in universal human rights.
Do you condemn that phrase, globalize the intifada, which a lot of people hear is a call to violence against Jews?
I don't believe that the role of the mayor is to police speech in the manner.
Quickly, for the people who care about the language and who feel really concerned by that phrase, why not just condemn it?
Ultimately, it's not language that I use. It's language I understand there are concerns about.
So tell me, as a legal scholar, do you believe that globalizing intifada is policing language?
Oh, please. It's a call to terrorism. Anyone
yes.
who understands that the intifada, what happened twice when people were bombed in cafes and on buses and people knifed to death as part of the call to terrorism, in Israel, the phrase globalize the intifada is to bring it here. I defend, by the way, people's right to say globalize the intifada. You can say, I want more terrorism here. Like the First Amendment gives you the right to say ugly, horrible, stupid things. But you also have to be held responsible for saying that. And that means that if you're running for mayor of New York, everybody gets to know that you're pro-terrorism, right? You can't weasel out of it. And let me just say something else, Brian. You said the thing about sending in social workers, right? Let's be super clear. This young man, if he becomes the next mayor of New York, he's going to have a security detail. He's not going to ask to be surrounded by social workers when he walks down the
Great
street
point.
In New York City. he is going to have a full security detail for himself, but our children who have to ride on the subways are going to have to go into subways that are less clean, less safe, and less likely to deliver them to their school or their job in one piece. So I don't want to hear about that stupid social work nonsense. It's ridiculous.
It is. As far as
his little dance about free speech, Brian, he doesn't want to police speech by not saying I'm rejecting globalized antifada, which is a call to action. On the other hand, if I say trans women are men, then every Democrat, including Zoran Mandami, gets himself all up in an uproar because he wants to police the speech of women who are defending women's rights for our daughters and for a generation of women who have the right to same-sex sports and same-sex facilities. So don't tell me he's suddenly become a big free speech advocate, because they've been policing our speech for a really long time.
So which
globalized the intifada is a call to terrorism, and he's in favor of it.
Right, and we see it on the streets now. And then we see, believe it or not, I guess it's legal. Of course it's legal, but it's scary. Scary stupid. On 42nd Street in Times Square in New York City, I know people listening around the country just know this is where all the tourists are. There are people protesting for Iran. While we're bombing Iran's nuclear program, this terroristic state, enemy of America for 46 years, we have New Yorkers protesting for Iran against us.
Look, Brian, for years when I was fighting in the education space and talking about the terrible, terrible sort of leftist indoctrination and critical race theory that was going on in our schools and in our universities and higher ed, and also in the K-12 space, people often acted like those of us raising the alarm were being histrionic or ridiculous, but we've educated a generation plus of kids to think that America is the enemy, that sensible good governance, like improving our public safety and making our schools better and supporting our small businesses, that's somehow not the path forward in our great city. And then instead we should have, and everyone keeps calling Zoran Mandami a socialist. Let's be clear. His prescriptions are communist. Saying that he wants to get rid of all billionaires and have government-supported grocery stores and make everything free is a communist plan, an economic plan, and he is going to accelerate the outward migration from our city, decimate our tax base, and make all of us have to live through sort of this is not a spoiler. Guess what? Communism doesn't work. You see it in every place that it's been tried. It doesn't work. It impoverishes people and makes great cities and great countries fall apart. And that's what there's no secret here as to how it would work if this guy got in office.
Maude Marin, our guest, former Democrat running as a Republican in the 2025 Manhattan District Attorney race against the notorious Alvin Bragg, notorious for being terrible. Go prosecute Danny Penny and President Trump, and you think that brings justice for the American people and for New Yorkers. A survey was done in Manhattan. They found that 56% of respondents described crime as out of control. A quarter of those attributed the crime rate to poor management by the mayor, while 22% blamed district attorney for allowing too many crimes to go unprosecuted. That's the problem. You commit a crime, they don't want to send them to Rikers, and they don't want to keep them in jail. They don't even want to detain them. So cops don't make the arrest. Not they don't want to waste their time. It's just a terrible combination. You're about 3,000 cops short of a full force in New York City. The money is there.
Right.
So, Maude, you mentioned you've been a Democrat your whole life. Have the Republicans given you the support to go against Alvin Bragg and the Democratic machine in New York?
You know, Brian, I'll say this. If people want to see what I would do versus Alvin Bragg, you can go to my website, maudeformanhattan.com, and I lay it all out. I have gotten tremendous support from the people, not just in New York, but around the country. People from all 50 states have sent donations. They know how bad Alvin Bragg is. I could definitely use a little bit more support from the powers that be in the Republican world. I understand that folks are pretty focused right now on defeating Zoran Mandami. I think that while a lot of people like to overlook Manhattan because they think you cannot win in Manhattan, I know for sure that there are enough votes in Manhattan to defeat Alvin Bragg, because I talk to people every day who, like you said, Brian, see crime with their own eyes out of control in our city. And it's not just crime, it's quality of life. You can walk through Washington Square Park and manage not to get mugged, but you will see people with needles sticking in their arms, people who are using the park as a toilet. You will see absolutely horrible, disgusting things. And we all pay a lot of taxes. We should have the right not just to not be mugged or hurt or harmed, but also to live in our beautiful city. And not so long ago, you could walk through that park with your kids and just see a beautiful, gorgeous park. And now you're walking through what looks like a crime scene. And that's not acceptable either.
I hear you. Thanks so much. I appreciate it. Maude Mayer, best of luck. Obviously, I hope you win. Alvin Bragg's an embarrassment to the country. He just doesn't realize it yet. And hopefully the Republican Party, whatever is left of it in Manhattan, will wake up and understand you have a unique opportunity here. And if people want to help you out, where do they go?
They go to MaudeMarin.com or MaudeForManhattan.com. You can sign up to volunteer, to door knock, to make phone calls, to donate. It's all there. Please go check it out.
All right. Shock the world. Maude, thank you so much.
Thank you, Brian.
All right. Your call's next. Brian Kilmeade Show, 1-866-408-7669. You can order the podcast, too. You can listen on the Fox News app. You can also hear the show live. Just click watch on the Fox News app. Plus, get the podcast on your favorite podcast platform, Brian Kilmeade Show. Millions have done it.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
The reason that the deficit numbers look so much better without this bill is that there is built into current law a very large tax increase set to take effect at the end of this year. Now, it isn't because current law has a lot of spending restraint in it. It doesn't. In fact, there's more spending restraint in this bill than there is in current law. But there's this huge tax increase set to take effect. You know, it would hit every household that pays federal income taxes pretty hard if it were to go into effect. And a lot of people think that would negate a lot of growth that would be beneficial to the economy and obviously and to tax receipts. So it gets kind of circular. But that's what this is really all about, a potential big tax increase.
Yes. So what I think Britt is saying, if I'm to understand it correctly, is that if you go back to pre-2017 tax rates, the brackets were higher. I mean, they were taking more money from every class, you know, except for the 49% of the people that don't pay any income tax. So then would be more revenue. So then the CBO goes, okay, there'd be more revenue. Now in comes the tax bracket with the 2025 big, beautiful bill. And they say, well, if there was no big, beautiful bill, look how much tax revenue would you had. But if there is some big, beautiful bill, look at how low it would be. Technically, revenues would be less. But the theory is if you give people their own money, they'll spend it, put it back into the economy. It'll come back twofold. But to me, it's such a weird calculus. Why would you look at the current tax system and say, let's play it off that and then project forward with all the pluses and minuses that the economic program brings? But instead, they project what it would be like if there was no bill. And that means all the tax breaks that were put into play in 2017 evaporate. Back go the taxes flying up, the corporate tax rate, top bracket, middle class bracket. They all go up. So technically, you get more money. But when you take more people's tax money, there's less money to invest. And therefore, the economy was going nowhere. What's really sprung this economy after the Obama years was the massive tax cut in 2017, especially on corporate. Even Obama wanted to cut the corporate tax rate. Michael's over in Oklahoma. Hey, Michael.
Hey, Brian. Good to talk to you. One of the reasons why I really like you, Brian, is because you're a reasonable man. And what that means, it doesn't mean that you and I wouldn't disagree, you being in New York and me in Oklahoma, on things, but our basic intent is a reasonable intent.
Thank you.
And that's what you're very welcome. I had the blessing to go to New York one time, and I was very pleased with the good folks there, although I'm sure there's specifics on which we would disagree, which doesn't matter. The end result is reasonable action on the conduct of Americans, and that's what makes us a nation. And so what I wanted to comment is with regard to the big, beautiful bill. And everything you're saying is absolutely correct. The big, beautiful bill has things President Trump said himself. He says there's things in the bill I love and things I don't like. President Trump got elected because I believe he's the only man that could be in the White House at this time who has a reasonable intent, and he had to be able to get there by getting the support of America in general. Elon Musk could not have done that. Rand Paul could not have done that. I like Rand Paul. I liked Elon Musk until he started doing the things that he's doing. And I'm wondering what his intent is. A third party would be harmful to America. And with regard to the bombing of Iran, I was very disappointed in MAGA for, you know, saying that President Trump did something wrong.
Of course.
It's insane to even consider Iran having a nuclear weapon.
But don't you see, Michael, though, do you see the president sees Bannon, sees Rubio, understands Lindsey Graham? He still makes the decisions. Nobody controls him. Elon Musk wanted Howard Lutnick to be Treasury Secretary. President goes, yeah, I'm tight with Elon. But he's not the Treasury Secretary. Besant is. So he makes all his decisions. These other guys pretend as if they're more powerful than they got the president's ear. President listens, says, okay, Steve Bannon, go back to hosting your show. Comb your hair. We're not listening to you on foreign policy. Candace Owens, you make no sense. And the president did a great thing. Thanks, Michael. I think it's reasonable.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We went on your website and realized there's a policy proposal that says your plan, and I'm going to quote it for folks, is to shift the tax burden from overtaxed homeowners in the outer boroughs to more expensive homes in richer and whiter neighborhoods. Explain why you are bringing race into your tax proposal.
That is just a description of what we see right now. It's not driven by race. It's more of an assessment of what neighborhoods are being undertaxed versus overtaxed. We've seen time and again that this is a property tax system that is inequitable. It's one that actually Eric Adams ran on saying that he would change in the first 100 days. He's since sought to defend it and lost at every juncture in court.
And I understand you're saying we're simply describing the types of neighborhoods that would see these increase in taxes. And yet, by invoking race, do you run the risk of potentially alienating key constituents?
I think I'm just naming things as they are.
Okay. This guy is such a treat in all the wrong reasons. Zohran Mamdani talking about, I just got to tax white people more. What's wrong with that? Of course, in 2025, that makes perfect sense. And then when asked to walk away from and say unfortunate language, I was just talking about suburbs or high tax or high rent air, whatever. No, it's white. Okay. So let's tax Hispanics less because they're not as good in math as the Asians. What are we talking about here? How did this guy get this primary victory and possibly be next mayor? We saw the mayor of Boca Raton come out and say, hey, New Yorkers, come to Boca Raton. We got zero tax state tax here. You're going to love our situation. You're going to really love the weather. And what is the result when it comes to real estate? Evidently, on the high end, there is a huge influx now of people saying, not investing, holding off. I'm seeing what happens. Let's find out from Pierre DeBoss, the managing partner of Romer DeBoss, and Pierre joins us now. Pierre, what is your response to that exchange, which we knew about because it was on his website, but does he hear him say it? We're going to tax the white neighborhoods more.
Brian, great to see you. You know, it's an appalling statement. You know, I don't know how you bring race and discrimination into the equation when you're talking about property taxes, you know, and for him not to fall on the sword and apologize and say, you know what, I misspoke, that wasn't appropriate. That even, in my opinion, makes it even worse, right? Like, at least admit to when you're wrong. But I mean, the sheer explanation of this statement, it just happens to be where the neighborhoods are. What's the most affluent neighborhood in New York? Manhattan. Manhattan's not a white neighborhood. Manhattan's one of the most diverse neighborhood areas in the entire world, right? It really is an unfortunate statement, and I'm offended he couldn't even apologize to the public for making.
So the one thing I have to say is that in life, you can't live anywhere you want. People listening to us now know that to be a fact. Not according to him. You should be able to live in New York City. It should be more affordable. If you want to make it more affordable, that's great. But no one has a right to live in Manhattan. You know how many people I know would love to live in Manhattan, but they can't? They got to commute, or they got to go live in Queens, Brooklyn, or the surrounding area. If you're listening around the country, just know that Manhattan often has the highest real estate. Brooklyn's rivaling it now. You don't have a right to live everywhere.
That's right. And then, you know, look, equality is nice in theory, but, you know, I want to live on Fifth Avenue. I don't live on Fifth Avenue. You know, there's no harm in that. That's life, right? Yeah, that's just the harsh realities of life. You know, I get the component of needing to create more affordable housing. I get the component of trying to make the city more accessible for people. You know, but you're not going to have, you know, the right to live everywhere you want to live. Nobody is, including yourself and me. But, you know, what you should be focusing on, as opposed to this nonsense of, you know, the pure equality across the board, which will never exist in world history, you should be focusing on how to create affordable housing. That's the key, right? You don't create affordable housing by the nonsense he's proposing. You create affordable housing by incentivizing development. That is the only way to do it. You incentivize development in the city, you provide tax incentives to developers, and you tie an affordable housing component to it. And look, you can say whatever you want about Mayor Adams. I think we're all rallying behind him now, regardless of what our opinion is.
You think people are, by the way, Pierre?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Silva and Cuomo have to drop out and back him. It's your best option. Jesus Christ can run as a Republican in New York City, and he'll never win. I mean, they'll never vote for Republican here. You have to back the most likely moderate candidate of them all. And at the moment, it's Adams, right? You don't have a choice. But my point being is that you have the initiatives like the City of Yes, which is one of the good things he's done. I don't think he's done a great job, but that was one of the very good things he's done, which is reducing regulation, easing zoning requirements, incentivizing development, helping incentivize the conversion of office buildings, which are half vacant, into housing and tying affordable housing. That's how you do it, right? You don't do it by freezing rents. You don't do it by socialism. You don't do it by pushing out your most affluent tax base out of the city and claiming you're going to tax them more and give all this stuff for free. Give me a break. That's nonsense.
So, Pierre, describe for everyone out there, I know if you were in the business then, the transition from Bloomberg to de Blasio and what happened. Pandemic aside, tell me from the business perspective, what happened?
You know, look, Bloomberg was a great mayor. Bloomberg did great for the city. Bloomberg was a great combination of having, obviously, the incredible business pedigree and being able to be a politician. I said this earlier, right? Like, Mamdani's not the first socialist we've had. We had 8 years of a socialist mayor in de Blasio. You know, people, like, he didn't maybe brag about being a socialist as much as Mamdani does. But let's make no joke of it. He was a socialist. And it was a disaster for New York City. Yes, did the pandemic catapult an exodus of people? Sure. But a large part of that started trending to take place before the pandemic and was compounded by policies that he enacted, like defunding the police and wanting to tax the rich, and the same rhetoric that makes people nervous and say, you know what, let me jump ship before this actually takes place. I'm not willing to roll the dice on this.
Yeah, and we watched it. We got spoiled. Giuliani was awesome for two, and then Bloomberg was awesome for three or four. I don't know who he asked for.
I don't even remember.
Three. But by the end, he wasn't as popular. We just thought we'd get competence. You know, I wasn't really thinking, you know, he was a Republican, an independent, and he ended up a Democrat or in some way, shape, or form. Didn't really matter. When the city, you don't really get into politics so much. There's too many X's and O's to go through. But here's the scary thing. When you combine that with the legislature in the city, you know, the city council, I mean, they're as left wing as him. So they're going to be impossible to destroy.
Well, I think that's why Adams has had such a difficult time getting things done, right? It's not, you can't throw it all on the mayor. You have city council, you have Albany, which are all colossal disasters right now. The problem is you've had the progressives gain more and more traction, and you need to rein the progressives in, because majority of society, like you were just saying, why was it just 10 years ago? You and I don't even remember what Bloomberg ran as. That tells you something, right? Like, that tells you that it didn't matter. You cared about policies as opposed to party.
Oh, yeah.
And now it's the complete opposite. And we need to get back to that. But you need legitimate candidates. You can't have this nonsense.
Pierre DeBoss is with us. He's a managing partner for Romer DeBoss. So, Pierre, you and I are not billionaires, but I aspire to be. And I'm not jealous of them. I think they're important, but not everyone agrees with me. Listen.
You are a self-described democratic socialist. Do you think that billionaires have a right to exist?
I don't think that we should have billionaires because, frankly, it is so much money in a moment of such inequality. And ultimately, what we need more of is equality across our city and across our state and across our country. And I look forward to work with everyone, including billionaires, to make a city that is fairer for all of them.
So he'll tolerate billionaires, but he'd like to destroy them. Have you ever heard anything like this outside? No, you know, it's just crazy.
It's crazy. You need the billionaires' tax revenue and job creation, but you don't want them to exist, right? It makes no sense. You know, listen, you have to look, take whatever famous billionaire, take Elon Musk, right? The Thomas Jefferson of our generation, take Jeff Bezos. They created two of the most successful companies in world history, right? I can't do that. You can't do that, right? They're a billionaire. You deserve to be a billionaire. You deserve to be taxed fairly, but at the same token, you should be penalized because you're incredibly successful and a generational talent. Like, and then look at all the jobs and the stimulus for the economy these companies have created. Like, what I just don't see how we're in a position where a 33-year-old socialist could potentially be mayor of New York City with this rhetoric that makes no sense.
So tell me, because New York is such an iconic city, I personally see a lot of stores empty. I see a lot of buildings being built. You mentioned about converting them into housing from office buildings, but there is now a push to get people back to work. Tell me the state of real estate, aside from this primary.
You know, I will tell you, the New York, Manhattan in particular, the demand to purchase here has picked up at least 10-15% in the last year and is at a healthy level. But the difference now between this market and other bull markets in Manhattan is that this is being fueled a lot by affluent second home buyers. People always want to be in New York City. People always want to enjoy the beauties of the city. People don't want to live here full time as much as they used to. And a large part of that is realizing, hey, I can go live in a low tax state or no income tax state and come back to New York City for a third of the year, enjoy everything I want to enjoy. And I don't have to deal with all the negatives that come with it, which include 50% increase in crime, filth, and now, you know, the socialist agenda is potentially being implemented. So the market is healthy in the sense that there's activity, but it's not healthy in the sense that it's being driven by people who don't live here full time. And you need those full time residents to pay your income taxes and to pay for all this free stuff that he's falsely promising all his voter base that he's going to give them.
What about
that's the state. You talk about office.
What about the commercial side? What about the commercial side?
Commercial side, we're 5 years since inception. We're over 5 years since inception pandemic. Good luck getting people back to the office. You're going to get them up marginally. It's been marginal increases. This is it. This is the new norm. I don't think you're seeing more than what you see present day to day. Your Fortune 500 companies, golden handcuffs, they're going to require that. That's not the majority of the workforce. Majority of the workforce is adapting this hybrid policy. It's here for good. Office buildings will never regain their value. You will have a tremendous amount of empty or unutilized space. That space should be reconfigured and ideally in a perfect world to create more housing.
Wow. Pierre, thanks so much. Appreciate it. And overall, your feeling, if this guy gets the primary, will it directly affect your business? If he not only gets the primary, becomes mayor, how do you think it'll affect your business and your company?
Absolutely. It's going to be a disaster. You're going to have investment capital left New York City after de Blasio changed the rent regulations in 2019. And this is only going to veer investors to other markets in a disastrous manner where real estate is going to suffer tremendously. In terms of people buying here, I think you're going to see an exodus of people. I think you're going to see people leave the city. And I think this is just a disaster waiting to happen. I think we have to do everything possible to avoid a Mamdani election.
All right, Pierre, go to work. Use your power. Use that influence that you have.
Try, my friend. I'm trying.
You got it. Pierre DeBoss, managing partner for Romer DeBoss. Thank you. And appreciate the insight. In the real world, that's business. Those are people that work 60 hours a week. They get a call at 6 o'clock to go show a house. They go do it. Maybe 80% of those people will not buy that place. You'll do it because you hustle. And those are the people that work for a living. They keep the country going. And if they have success and become billionaires, they deserve it. How about that? He doesn't understand that. 1-866-408-7669. Your call's next. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Increasing your intelligence quotient.
What the hell did you just say?
It's Brian Kilmeade. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
So I think this is a moment, if Donald Trump wants to push, because I actually think the threat to blow up the Israeli government now is a little bit more empty than it was before. And so I would push. I actually think, you know, right now nothing's going on with Ukraine and Russia. The war is grinding on and getting worse. Iran was dealt with militarily for the time being. So this is the one diplomatic opportunity Donald Trump has to make some progress. And I think this would, in the long run, you know, be big. And so I would, he should certainly press it. He should certainly explore it. And by the way, it would also help with the Saudis. Something Donald Trump very much wants to do is to bring them into the so-called Abraham Accords, bring them into the diplomatic process. This is potentially a win-win for the administration.
There's no doubt about it, because it looks like the funding would be cut from Iran and Hezbollah, and Hezbollah is going to get it cut too. And Richard Haass, the esteemed political analyst, international expert, he says, look, you go in there, tell Netanyahu, you killed everybody, all the higher-ups there, you got to give the Palestinian people a shot. So how do we do it? I would like to have a good answer to that question. I have not heard a good answer. Evidently, if you read some of the Israeli newspapers, they talk about how they've identified a few leaders there that they give some money in compensation to, because they're trying to figure out who they can give aid to that's not going to be used against them. Hamas famously takes the aid. They sell it back to the Palestinian people. You believe this? So, and UNRWA does, this UN organization, totally corrupt, and we have to stop it. So here's an example, though. I mean, they were in an outdoor cafe, and the IDF hit an outdoor cafe. I don't know what they were doing. Beachside, 40 people are dead. I'm not sure if there was a higher-up in there or not. But the IDF has made it clear, we think militarily we're pretty much done. So let's get the 50 hostages back, 25 of which could be alive. Ed in Westboro, New York. Ed.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
I believe that Trump lost in, this is in regards to this Mangani guy, Trump lost Biden. The country got to see what it was like to not have Trump and all of that crazy stuff happen. And it may happen to have to go the same way in New York. These people, unfortunately, may have to experience this craziness, because the road to paradise begins in hell.
Thanks so much, Julie. And have a listen on FM News Talk 97.1. Hey, Julie.
Hi there. I'm a 3-time Trump voter. He only won by 2 million votes. Labels like alligator Alcatraz just cement the public's view that Republicans are jerks. And we just can't resist.
So you're saying that you're a Republican, but you just don't like the label it puts on the party.
We need to bring people along, just like Elon Musk did damage to Doge with the chainsaw. I just don't think this kind of label helps.
Right.
Even though the policy is good.
But
the
policy
is great.
I don't know if you show my show on Sunday night. I do believe that the next thing President Trump will do, probably wait for the dust to settle on the trade deals and the big, beautiful bill, if the word is it's going to pass the Senate soon, and I hope that's the case, I bet you he does immigration reform. And I bet you we focus on the criminals more, and we talk about not a pathway to citizenship, but long-term work visas, or regularization, I guess is the term they use, where if you've been here for 15 years working on a farm, a meat factory, whatever, in restaurants, and you want to get a sponsor, you stay. And then we focus on the criminal. It's going to be very hard for Democrats to be pro-illegal immigrant criminal, although they'll try. And I just think that that's where this whole thing is heading. But in the short term, they do need beds, because the last guy let in between 12 and 20 million people, if you count the gotaways. So that's the thing. Thanks for the call, Julie. But, you know, people say you don't need this. I personally don't know if you needed detention beds in the Everglades. They got plenty of room in Florida. Didn't think it was a big deal. I didn't think it was necessary to take on the environmentalist for this reason, personally. But getting back to Gaza for a second, that's the second thing the president will do. Number one, Netanyahu wants to give Trump a win. He wants to make Republicans look good because he can work with Republicans. He's got a huge problem with Democrats, and you still don't have a clue how bad it was. For the people, tell me that they were absolutely being iced out by the left-wing lunatics like Blinken and Sullivan, and Biden was sounding off, was not reliable. So he wants to make him look good. I would not doubt that we got another announcement next week. But I would love to see an idea of what to do next in Gaza so there's no downtime where people just starve or eat box lunches. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. It's very important Tuesday. It could be Big Beautiful Bill Day.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're there. Brian Kilmeade coming to you from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan. Heard around the country, around the world. A lot going on today. I mean, we're going to find out about the P. Diddy verdict, I think. But some bizarre thing happened where one juror was not compliant, wouldn't follow the rules. And I'm thinking, are they, you know, uneducated? No, 51-year-old scientist can't follow the rules. They think it could be a plant. And this guy is just as evil as it gets. For him to get off would be crazy. Also happening today, we'll find out the margin of victory for Zohan Mamdani. He won the first round of ranked choice voting. We'll find out about the second. And then he'll have the Democratic nomination, and we'll see if Eric Adams, Cuomo, or Sliwa can stop him. Jason Chaffetz is here. Jonathan Greenblatt, the CEO of National Director of the ADL, is also here. And we're following the progress in the Big Beautiful Bill, the Voterama. Looks like it has stopped, but it was 20-plus hours. Jason, what do you think is happening in the Senate? I know that they're worried about four votes. They're worried about four votes. Murkowski, Collins, Tillis, and Rand Paul. Tillis and Rand Paul are thought to be lost.
I still think they get it over the finish line. It sounded like the latest comment from the Majority Leader Thune that they have the votes. It's always a little precarious, but I think they're going to get from here to there.
Where do they vote? When do they vote? Today?
I think they could vote at any moment. Once they open the vote, it won't close in 10 or 15 minutes. It could go on for a few hours. But
why wouldn't they all show up and just vote for something like this?
Because a lot of them want to go home. So I think that is always a compelling factor. It's just the way the Senate operates. They just kind of go on their own sweet time.
All right. So what they would do is the Senate operates, and then House is in town, right?
Yeah.
So if you're a Republican, this is what Speaker Johnson is hoping that the Senate pays attention to. Cut one.
Could you talk about, I mean, as the Senate bill stands, if you assume there's no changes, which is what they're saying, is that something you think you could pass?
We're going to pass this bill one way or the other. And I have prevailed upon my Senate colleagues to please, please, please get as close to the House product as possible. I've been very consistent from the very beginning, and I'll continue to do that. So there's still a lot of amendments and a lot of game to play yet, and we're hopeful.
Do you need change it? Like, will you change it if they don't change it?
We'll see what the final product is. I'm very hopeful and optimistic as always. We will deliver. We will get this job done.
And he's been pretty consistent, always optimistic. But Jason, what is the procedure? So if the Senate hands it to him and, you know, Don Baker, they got across by one vote. I know some people are out and some seats were vacant. But if Don Baker, who says, I'm retiring, and doesn't like the president anyway, and the feeling's mutual over in Nebraska, and if you have to go back in, if you're Speaker Johnson, you say, well, what do I have to do to change this to get your vote? If he changes, is it going to go back to the Senate?
Well, I've been to this rodeo many times. Thomas Massie is also in that boat saying, hey, I'm not going to do it. I still think they're going to force the vote. They're going to force. Here's the thing. If you take the vote and it does not pass, you can vote on it again. So they can keep doing it. Once that full pressure and weight of the entire bill goes, I think they'll still ultimately get the vote. And a lot of times you'll see people who are on the fence or don't want to do it, they'll just vote present. They won't actually vote against it. We saw that earlier. We saw Andy Harris do that at a Maryland on a critical vote. So there are ways to get from here to there, but you got to almost put it up to a vote. People start changing their minds when it's actually on the floor and their constituents start calling them.
So tell me if I'm wrong about this. When the CBO goes to score it, they scored it as if 2017 tax law didn't take into effect. They say, okay, the taxes go up. And if you don't do anything,
so
taxes go up. right? And that means on the surface right away, more revenue comes in because the corporate taxes go up, the top rate goes up, everything went up. But then 2017 happened and brought every all the taxes down. And it was so bad, being sarcastic, that Joe Biden didn't touch it. Didn't touch it. Right. He wasn't so, nobody touched any of the tax things. Nobody raised the corporate tax. Nobody did anything about it. But now it's time to make it permanent. And the CBO said, okay, if you make them permanent, that means there'll be a tax cut. So therefore, we lost revenue. And that lost revenue figures into how much goes into the deficit. And then we project growth at 1.8. Again, abhorrently low, 1.8. I mean, talk about the glass being half empty. 1.8. So you put those things again, and then you have $3.3 trillion into the debt over the next 10 years, as opposed to if you take the 2017, which it would be a $500 billion. And I think they would be off the deficit.
The only reason the original Trump tax cuts were not made permanent was because of this scoring. What they do is they look at a 10-year window, and they assume that if you raise taxes, all the revenue to the Treasury will go up by the proportion of those taxes. What they don't do is dynamic scoring. And under Donald Trump, they cut taxes. Democrats yelled and screamed that that was going to hurt revenue to the Treasury, and it did exactly the opposite of what the Democrats said. You cut taxes, the economy moves, and the revenue to the Treasury went up. Same principles in place here, because not only do you get to continue on with the tax cuts that happened in 2017, you have additional tax cuts, which will be more stimulative. So to suggest that the economy is only going to be moving at 1.8%, whether or not you have taxes or don't have taxes or have a tax increase, is ridiculous. The CBO is fundamentally wrong. They were wrong on Obamacare. They were by millions, by tens of millions of people, they were off. And I think they never take that into consideration. And it's so, so wrong.
So the Wall Street Journal says the Senate bill is the first legitimate shot at entitlement reform in 20 years. Yeah. It says it slows the steady growth of Medicaid, food stamps, and student loans. Notice, I didn't say cut. It slows the rate of growth on all these items. It didn't stop Tom Tillis for saying it's the worst thing ever, or Elon Musk for tweeting out that I'm going to start a third party if you pass this.
Yeah, look, there are fundamental reforms. Does it do everything that I would do as a conservative in cutting expenses? No, but this is such a huge, massive step forward. And so you have all these people that say, oh, we want border security. Well, it does that. Oh, we need to help the military. Well, it does that. Do we need tax reform? Oh, it does that. You know, should there be a work requirement for people to get Medicaid and Medicare? Well, for some, yes. For others, no. And so for all these bumper sticker politics of trying to say, oh, it's going to destroy the world and the earth and everything else, they're just wrong. They're just fundamentally wrong. And they got to step up, take the vote, and live with the consequences of it, because Democrats, they want a tax increase. That's what they believe. We're one good tax increase away from prosperity. And again, they're wrong.
So you have a book out today. Congratulations. It's called They're Coming For You, How Deep State Spies, NGOs, and Woke Corporations Plan to Push You Out of the Economy. And you have on the cover Soros, you have Bill Gates, you have Obama and President Xi and Zuckerberg.
Yeah.
So why that collection?
Because they're using data. Doge looked at all the money that's going out the door. We should be looking at the data that's going out the door. They're using that to affect elections. They're doing that to debank people, to push them out of the economy so they can't participate that. You've had Operation Choke Point, for instance, and Operation Choke Point 2.0. You have how it affects medicine. If you think that the Democrats and the far left radicals are and the woke corporations are just going to let Trump and conservatives be on their merry way, no way. They're going to use that data and they use it against you. It's happening in real time right now, and people have to realize that and open their eyes. That's why I wrote for They're Coming For You, because that's what they're doing. They debanked Melania Trump and Barron Trump. They tried to go after the poultry industry. They try to go after the meat industry. They try to go after the gun industry, but they're also going to go after you.
So did you find this out from work the Doge was doing?
No, I started doing this while I was in Congress. I was starting to look at facial recognition and how that's weaponized. We figured out that in Florida, when you go to get your driver's license, name, address, telephone, hair color, whether or not you wear glasses, all that. Did you know that the state of Florida used to, they would make you pay to get your driver's license. Then they would take that information and sell it to a data broker. It is a $400 billion a year industry, data brokering. I can go and I could take, don't want to give anybody an idea, but I could take a specific address. I can look at, I can take a circular within 100 feet and tell you everybody that's been there with a mobile phone in the last 60 days. Readily available. I can buy that right now.
How can you do that? It's just websites?
Data brokers. It's called geofencing. Look at your automobile. They're rolling computers. You can take all the information. Those car companies, I detail exactly what they're doing. One of the big benefits that Elon Musk gets from that Tesla, and it's all these others, Toyotas and whatnot, Kia, they can tell you what radio station you're listening to, where you're going to, how fast you travel, whether or not you come to a stop. Do you look in the rearview mirror? All of this data is collected and it's sold. It's monetized. You combine that. We have over 500,000 cameras in this country that are watching and doing facial recognition.
Are you saying this in order to just know what's happening, or are you saying that there's a way to stop it?
I think there's a way to stop it. I think you should have the right to be forgotten in this country. You as consideration enter into a detail. You get that mobile phone and you trade away a little bit of privacy so you can have some convenience. But why should they be able to monetize that in perpetuity? And why is it that they enter into a contract with a 13-year-old and then they continue to monetize that? We talk about how they target kids, they give computers in schools. Well, they're gathering all this data and information. And so, yeah, there are things that should be done. I think you have the right to be forgotten, and I think there needs to be full disclosure on exactly what they're collecting and what they're sending. It's like when we did reform on labeling for food. They should have to do that for everything in technology.
So, that's so interesting because there are people out there that are looking to do that. The former owner of the Los Angeles Dodgers, his name eludes me at the moment, came in here and says that's a way to grab back your privacy. He also wants to buy TikTok because that's the biggest breach. I mean, TikTok, yeah. For that, for us to still be using TikTok, could you explain to our audience how bad that is?
Once they're in your phone, they're going to glean everything, all of your contacts, all of your communication, who you're texting, how often you're texting, where you're going, like your geolocation, all of that. And look, kids, I think, are naive to it. They like watching the funny videos. I like watching cat videos, too. I think they're pretty funny.
I don't.
But but I do. And look, that's very compelling. The entertainment side of it is very, very compelling. But that data is going for nefarious intent, and the Chinese are using it, and it's affecting elections, it's affecting your health care, what you pay, whether or not you can get medicine or not. And the book, I have 450 footnotes out there. This took a year and a half to put together. This is not some tinfoil conspiracy. This is stuff that's happening right now in real time.
All right. So it's called They're Coming For You, Jason Chaffetz. How deep state spies, NGOs, and woke corporations plan to push you out of the economy. Do you have a few minutes when we get back?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, a few more minutes with Jason. We do know they are back to the Voterama. Well, actually, they never stop, but now they're back. They look fully in attendance. Could a vote, from what you could tell, does a vote look like they're ready to vote?
Oh, no, I think they're done with the Voterama. I think they're getting ready to vote.
You wouldn't have that many. That's when they're all there, right?
Yeah, you wouldn't have that many senators sitting there.
The bad side about having a show from 9 to noon, it's very hard to follow what's happening in real time. I have to kind of do it back before there were talkies, like Charlie Chaplin. I'm trying to interpret and read lips.
This is waking time for the Senate, so they're awake at this hour.
Back in a moment.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
A few more minutes with Congressman Jason Chaffetz, Fox News contributor. He's got a book out called They're Coming For You, How Deep State Spies, NGOs, and World Corporations Plan to Push You Out of the Economy. And I've thought about this. They put out over the weekend that Eric Trump put out that the family has spent $400 million fending off the attacks on them and their companies. And they said most of it, the Russia investigation. Think about Letitia James, all this stuff that they had to do, fight off. Their CFO goes to jail. Is that part of what you're talking about in this book? You get information on somebody, you weaponize it against them?
No, this is about you as an individual. These aren't political leaders. Look, the Trump family's gone through probably more lawfare than anybody else in the world. What I'm talking about is the average person who maybe just lives in the heartland. They live in Tennessee or Illinois or something like that, and they happen to have a gun. Maybe they go to Cabela's. Maybe they bought a MAGA hat. Those people are being targeted. And targeted significantly. And I'm also talking
even about, still with President Trump in power?
Oh, absolutely. And
by who? With the FBI run by Dan Bongino and Kash Patel?
I'm just telling you what they do is the government will sell the data. Once the brokers have it, then you have other organizations that can start to use that data. And reputational risk is something that banks and credit unions are forced to look at. Now, the Fed, just in the last 5 days, has said that they're going to pull that back a bit, but they get tested by the Federal Reserve. And reputational risk is how many of your consumers actually buy these products, because that adds to your reputational risk. That's how people get debanked and they don't even know it. Like, what do you mean I can't get a loan? So what do you mean I can't get it?
Yeah, Jamie Dimon claims that doesn't happen.
Oh, it happens in spades. I detail and articulate it, and I list out all these different organizations. You ask a cattleman if they've had trouble getting loans, because the woke left really wanted to get rid of cattle. They just did not believe that
they
cows should
exist.
They thought
that meat and cows were destroying
and poultry and chickens. And those people had a really hard time getting banking relationships. And they debanked Melania and Barron Trump. And you can go down the list. It's huge. The other thing is healthcare. One of the most gnarliest things I found in the book is they started a group, the Democrats did, called Vote ER. And his doctor ended up getting, get this, they got thousands and thousands, 50,000 healthcare professionals in 700 hospitals to go and register voters, people that were in the hospital. It even went to psychiatric patients, registered the vote. Guess what? Once they know who you're going to vote, once they know that you vote or that you're already registered, they then go and compare that to other data and say, oh, here's all the Democrats. Then they started to say, hey, we're going to target this. So in Kansas, for the abortion vote that they had, they sent out 65,000 texts. And if this is your doctor, you're under sedation, and they come and say, hey, let's talk about voting and your voter registration. I mean, that is really unbelievable that they – so much for HIPAA laws, so much for patient, you know.
See, the one thing that got me when in 2020, President Trump's in the White House, but yet he's being shadow banned. His followers are being – you're being shadow banned. Republicans, conservative thoughts, columns, tweets that are trending, all of a sudden don't trend. Don Jr. So, but yet he was in power, and yet he had the FBI director, and he had the CIA director. What is – I mean, did he not – what was going on here? Who's running the country?
Right now you can go into Times Square and you'll see Ray-Ban and Meta doing an ad to sell glasses that have AI components. So we talk about how MIT, these two kids, came up and developed for less than $200 these glasses, which are now commercially available. It wasn't a direct connection, but they're doing the same thing, where they can walk down the street and through facial recognition. Remember, these other companies have tens of billions of things, and they can say, oh, look, that's Jill. And then quickly it tells, oh, Jill went to the University of Tennessee. She majored in anthropology.
You can see that right now.
You can see that right now. And they're marketing and they're selling it because they're using that data. And it's scary.
The name of the book, They're Coming For You, How Deep State Spies, NGOs, and Woke Corporations Plan to Push You Out of the Economy. Congratulations on the book, Jason.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It. Go get it.
Thank you.
Jonathan Greenblatt next, CEO and National Director of the ADL.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Do you condemn that phrase, globalize the intifada?
That's not language that I use. The language that I use and the language that I will continue to use to lead this city is that which speaks clearly to my intent, which is an intent grounded in a belief in universal human rights.
Do you condemn that phrase, globalize the intifada, which a lot of people hear as a call to violence against Jews?
I don't believe that the role of the mayor is to police speech in the manner.
Very people, quickly, for the people who care about the language and who feel really concerned by that phrase. Why not just condemn it?
Ultimately, it's not language that I use. It's language I understand there are concerns about.
Do you believe this clown? And he's going to get the Democratic nomination to be the next mayor of New York City. He doesn't hear the police, police words. Jonathan Greenblatt joins us now, CEO and National Director of the ADL. Jonathan, how horrified are you by this guy's imminent nomination?
Well, I'll tell you, Brian, I'm so glad to be back on the show, but I wish we weren't talking about this.
I know.
The idea that you would have someone who would vie to be mayor of New York City, the city, not only in America, but in the world, with the largest Jewish population, who is willfully unwilling to simply articulate that a phrase that is associated with violence, with the slaughter of more than 1,000 people, that it worries Jews, that it frightens Jews, people who will be his constituents. It is astonishing to me. And got, you know, credit to Kristen Welker, as you played in that clip. She went after him again and again and again. She gave him chance after chance after chance. And he didn't blow it, Brian. He told us so much, not by what he said, but by what he didn't say. That's what I heard the loudest, what he chose not to say, what he chose to communicate with his silence, and it's frightening.
It is, and the thing is, he's proud of it. Sometimes if you ask Bernie Sanders, you're a socialist. He'll say, no, listen, I'm here to give everyone an opportunity. They don't really like to dwell on it. Or, you know, that was something I responded to a question and it came out wrong. You know, he goes, just ask him. He'll tell you. He'll tell you everything. He's proud of this. He's proud. Billionaires should be illegal. Right. Remember, he was arrested October 8th, protesting against Israel after the October 7th attacks. You saw him go after Tom Homan. He looked like he had to be restrained for arresting illegal immigrants. I mean, this is a despicable character.
Yeah, I mean, the reality is that if we try to understand Zohran Mamdani, he got his career started as a student activist at Bowdoin College, where he was the founder of their local chapter on campus of Students for Justice in Palestine. And for your listeners, Brian, SJP is the most hateful, the most hostile, the most outrageous group on college campuses that has led the effort to systematically target and victimize Jewish students, especially since October the 7th. That is where Mamdani got his start. And look, like I appreciate that as politicians, they have positions on a range of issues, but on this core issue, in a moment when anti-Semitic violence has surged, I mean, we've seen, you know, the state with the most anti-Jewish acts was New York in America last year, and 70% happened in New York City, and this guy won't say unequivocally, I stand with my Jewish constituents. This man won't say, you know, unambiguously, I do not support violence against Jewish people. Instead, he bobs, he weaves, he ducks, and he moves. I got to tell you, Brian, I think all of us have real reason to be concerned.
So why do you think he got to so many votes? Well, 400,000,
yeah.
But...
Yeah, let's be honest. Yeah, he didn't get a lot of votes. Only like 1 out of 4 Democrats voted. And even then, I mean... We're talking about pretty small numbers, but it doesn't matter. I think he ran on an agenda of affordability. And look, I'm a very proud capitalist over here. I don't believe in, you know, government-run grocery stores. I thought that fell out of style in the Soviet Union, you know, in the 1970s, but whatever. So he ran on an agenda that tried to appeal to New Yorkers who are struggling. Who have economic challenges, and I get that, and I appreciate that. There are a lot of people who are struggling. The challenge is that I have a background in economics, but that's not my job today. I would say that all of the economics ideas I've heard him propose have failed. They failed in the Soviet Union. They failed in communist China. They have failed over and over again. But my focus is on protecting the Jewish people, on fighting back against hate. And while he might not have made that a central focus of his campaign, it has been a central focus of his political career, and I'm deeply worried that he will bring that to New York City in a way that will normalize hate against Jewish people and eventually all people.
But he says he's not there to police speech. What do you say to that?
He said what?
He says, I'm not there to police speech.
I mean, whatever. He should be. Look, he's also said defund the police, right?
Yeah.
So this guy has a funny choice of words. But again, sometimes what matters most is not what you say. It's what you choose not to say. And by not saying globalize the Intifada is wrong, and by not speaking out unequivocally after Jewish, you know, people, including Jewish New Yorkers, were slaughtered on October the 7th, he's told us everything that we need to know. So, look, at the end of the day, though, when asked by Kristen or others, Brian, he resorts to, like, clever quotes and slick sound bites. I'm not interested in that. I want to know what is his plan to actually protect Jewish New Yorkers, right? And he hasn't shared that with us. He hasn't told us that. And I'm not interested if he goes and he finds, like, a small group of radical Jewish people who are anti-Israel to meet with and say, look, I found my tribe. No, the vast majority of Jewish New Yorkers are Zionist. The vast majority of us care about our community. And the vast majority of us have the right to know how he will protect us in a time of need.
So I want you to hear what Mayor Eric Adams, get your take on him, because he seems to be the only way to stop Mamdani getting this mayor job. Here's what he said. Cut 37.
Jewish voters are going to do an analysis to determine exactly where he stands on these important issues. The largest Jewish population outside of Israel is in New York. My focus is on this city, because Jewish voters are talking about public safety. African-American voters are talking about public safety, and all the other demographics are the same thing.
So he says it's up to Jewish New Yorkers. You have more Jewish New Yorkers in New York than any other place outside Israel, right? Does that matter? Are you guys all, is the Jewish community on the same page with this?
Well, look, like, the ADL is a 501c3, not a C4, so we don't actually do politics. But what we will do is make sure we shine a very hot, bright light on exactly what Mayor Adams is saying. And Mayor Adams has been excellent. He has been amazing. He has stood with the Jewish community from his time in Brooklyn to his time in City Hall without hesitation. And that's not too much to ask. I think he's correct to point out that Jewish people have a vote, and I hope Jewish people will look at the candidates and consider the facts and do what they feel is right. I think I know where they would land.
So, you know, I was on with Sid Rosenberg was on my Sunday show, and he said, in his, these are his words, New Yorkers are filled with bad Jews that don't care about Israel and don't care to fight out against anti-Semitism. Do you find the same thing?
I probably might not put it exact. I appreciate Sid and his voice. I might not put it exactly the same way. But I can tell you the Jewish New Yorkers I talk to, and American Jewish people all over the country, are deeply, deeply alarmed. Anti-Semitic incidents, Brian, are up literally over 900% this last decade. The issues on college campuses that we've talked about it before, a place like Columbia University, NYU, Hunter College, they are abominable. And there's a hardcore group of malevolent actors who are driving this. I really appreciate that President Trump and Secretary McMahon have been bold on this issue. We need that kind of leadership. I appreciate that Mayor Adams has been bold on this issue. And that shows us, by the way, you know, President Trump is a Republican. Mayor Adams is a Democrat. Like, this isn't a right or left issue. It's just right and wrong. And on this issue, I'm waiting to hear Kenneth Mondani clearly tell us that he's on the right side of things.
So he, by the way, is for the BDS movement to divest from the boycott and divest from Israel. And he's pushing, that's been his message for a while. Then over the weekend, the State Department has pulled the visas issued to British punk rocker Bob Villain and his band after this was their impromptu, I'm sure, rehearsed chant at a festival broadcast on the BBC throughout Europe. Listen.
Free, free! Free, free! Free, free! Alright, but have you heard this one, though? Death, death to the IDF! Death, death to the IDF! Death, death to the IDF!
So he led those chants, was really proud of it. He says he hopes his daughter grows up to understand you have to try to change things you don't like in this world. And they took his visa and said, go tour somewhere else. So he's not going to be coming here. But your thoughts of that sentiment and the crowd that followed him in that chant?
Well, look, it's outrageous. At a music festival, 200,000 people would repeat a chant like that. It's despicable that I guess this aptly named person, Bob Villain, would resort to something like that. And I'm glad that Secretary Rubio made sure this guy doesn't have a visa. He shouldn't be in this country if he's going to incite violence.
So, yeah, I hope they stomp down on it. I love what the president's doing with Harvard a big time, and I think they're going to come to some type of resolution and hopefully some change at Columbia. What's your thought internationally of Netanyahu coming to visit the president on Monday, talking about peace in Gaza? Your thoughts?
Look, I must say, I have tremendous respect for the fact that President Trump stood with Prime Minister Netanyahu in the State of Israel when the Islamic Republic of Iran attacked, as they've been waging a war against one of these forever wars. The forever war that I want to end is the war that Iran has been waging against America and Israel for nearly 50 years. I think President Netanyahu and President Trump stopped it in its tracks. That's a good thing. I'm glad Bibi will come to the White House to share a plan for peace in the region. And look, you know, the U.S.-funded and Israeli-operated GHF, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, run by Reverend Johnny Moore, is doing amazing work to try to feed the people of Gaza and not allow Hamas to hijack and hurt the people seeking food. We all want peace in that region, Brian. I want it. You want it. Your listeners want it. But it needs to be peace on terms where everyone is accepted for who they are, regardless of how they pray, where the fascists and the Islamists don't get control, and where people can just realize their aspirations and dreams as Jews, as Christians, Muslims, whatever they want to be, and live together in peace. And I hope that's the path we're on now that the Islamic Republic of Iran has been defanged, now that Hamas and Hezbollah have been defeated, now that Syria has changed. I hope we're on a path to a better future for everyone.
Well, how do you feel about a two-state solution?
I think we had a two-state solution of sorts on October the 6th, and we saw what Hamas did. So I hope that the Palestinian people can realize their dreams in a demilitarized way with an education system that doesn't teach them hate. And I think if we can do that, if we can have a kind of regime change in Gaza, where we can put a responsible government in place, as we've seen happen in lots of other places, right? This isn't impossible. We denazified Germany. We did regime change in Japan with Hirohito. Hamas cannot be allowed to rule Gaza. Not now, not ever. An organization dedicated to murdering and committing genocide against their Israeli neighbors and talking about killing Jews wherever they are cannot be allowed to rule Gaza. So I want them out for the safety and security of everyone in the region, and then I think all things might be possible. And the Israelis and the Palestinians, they'll figure that out themselves. I leave it to them to do so when Hamas is gone and all the hostages are let free.
And the good news, according to the Israelis, every one of the Hamas leadership is dead, including the last one on Friday, who is one of the founders and one of the architects of the October 7th attack. Is that what you hear?
Yeah, that's what I hear. And, you know, it's interesting. They're all Hezbollah leadership gone, Iranian leadership just about gone, and all the Hamas leadership gone. So I understand that Qatar put out a new peace proposal today. I really think it's time for the Qataris to come to the table and actually do something constructive, Brian, and help us to end this conflict once and for all. All the hostages need to be freed. You know, the Hamas criminals can be given safe passage to the Sudan or Yemen or go send them to Iran for all I care. And let's figure out a path towards peace finally for that region. All of us want that.
Jonathan, you're way too busy and way too needed. I never thought we'd get to a point in this country where anti-Semitism, anti-Israeli sentiment would rise like this. But hopefully we've turned the corner on it. And thanks for continuing to do what you do.
Look, we're in this fight together, Brian. I so appreciate you and your voice. Thanks for having me on.
Jonathan Greenblatt, CEO, National Director of the ADL. Thanks so much. Meanwhile, they're now, I believe, beginning to vote on the big, beautiful bill. What will it be? We'll be back in a moment.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
You have to make a real effort to stay insulated from the facts and common sense. And I joked earlier about the Trump show I'm addicted to. I really am fascinated. I can't stop watching and marry that to the fact that there are 80-some million people that would vote again for him tomorrow.
So, do you think Nicole Wallace recoiled and said, I can't get enough of it?
No, it's the Trump voters are all insulated. And they just don't know anything else. And they're in an echo chamber. And that's why they continue to vote for him.
Is that what he said? I thought he was complimenting. It sounded like he was complimenting. You know, the Trump show, I just can't get enough of it.
Oh, no. I mean, I think he's like fascinated by it, but he thinks that Trump voters are just insulated and they don't know any better, which is why they vote the way they do, which is a little ironic coming from the uber left-wing bubble of Hollywood.
Really?
That being said, I do love Jason Bateman, but his views not
so much.
You
just spent 4 years pretending that a president was sane and not mentally and not brain damaged, and they think that we're insulated? Really? What about the laptop? Who's insulated to think that wasn't real? What on what planet was the Russian hoax legitimate? And what criteria was that a legitimate impeachment with the Ukraine call in the big picture of things? And then when you look at this last election, these people are in a bubble? 77 million people in a bubble? I mean, that you could say that, but you're never going to get elected again if that is the overall consensus of the party. You don't think people get tired of pronouns, people of men's and men and women's sports? You don't think people are tired of the political correctness, the environmentalism running over the country, dominating everything, the ridiculous protests about America that was born on slavery, on borrowed land or on stolen land? You don't think people were sick of all that crap and want to just get back to having a job, being proud of the country? And I'm happy to say that the country's already changed. Jason Bateman might be pretty upset to find out that our country moved up 13 points in our perception of the country when asked this question. Are you proud of your country? 58% said yes. It should be higher. Last year at this time, 45%. The year before, 44. And then 39. That's with Joe Biden as president. In 2017, it was at 51. In 2011, it was 70. So we got to get back to that. But Democrats, 36% proud of their country. Republicans, 85%. 44% of independents. So Republicans are on the front. Yeah, we live in a bubble that we think they're an exceptional nation better than everybody else. Guilty as charged. Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't forget to watch Fox and Friends tomorrow and go to BrianKilmeade.com to see me on stage August 23rd in Dallas, Texas.
Hey, it's Kennedy, and I am here to save your 4th of July. Our special episode live from Langens in New York City drops this Wednesday. I'm going to be joined by Rosanna Scotto, Dr. Drew Pinsky, Emily Campagno, and Jimmy Fallon. Listen and follow at foxnewspodcast.com.